Ladies and gentlemen, one of the most startling interviews I did for a long time went out a few weeks ago. And it was with a lovely person called Amy, who then spoke about mermaids. And I said to Amy, please, will you put us in contact, which Amy has done. First of all, Amy, thank you for being very honest with us about what you talked about. Could you give us a very brief resume of you?
I am, in my late 50s. I transitioned to live as a woman in my late 40s. I have a professional career with a major bank. I transitioned in the workplace. At the time, I do have a family, and I had sort of, you know, relationship issues, which were quite complicated at the time. But I think the key thing for me is knowing who I was has been a major thing all through my life. So I knew I was different at a very, very young age, probably about 5 or 6, and knew I was transgendered at the age of about 12 or 13, but then was unable to do anything about it, get any information. So I kind of struggled for most of my adult life trying to reconcile who I was and how I felt and how I wanted to live my life with, yeah, having a male body and being expected to lead a male life. And, you know, I got locked into that for all sorts of reasons, you know, work, family and societal pressures. And being able to transition with huge support from, you know, my employer at the time, Barclays, and, you know, and from many friends and organisations, and do that very successfully in the workplace, but also with the support of the community, has made the most amazing difference to my life. And I now feel, you know, I'm living my life as myself. I feel authentic. And, you know, kind of the baggage that I carried around for years and the conflict I felt about who I really was and how I was living my life has gone. So, mm-hmm. So for me, kind of having taken me, 40 years plus to deal with that, I think the fact that these days we recognise people who are trans at a much earlier age, and whilst the journey is a real challenge, there are many ways in which young trans people are supported, and lots more information to help people understand who they are and what's happening to them. I think that is just amazing, and I wish it was there at my time, but it wasn't. Yeah. But the fact that, you know, we live in far more enlightened times, and while life for young trans people and their families is by no means easy, we're in a much more different space than we were when I was growing up in the 60s and 70s.
After that interview, by the way, we got a request from your company in America. Yes. That they wanted to use the interview for the staff over there, which we were thrilled and flattered by. And it's nice to think that something like that happens from an interview.
Well, I think it did come from America, yeah. Absolutely, and I saw that. But actually, it will be used globally, Pete.
Wow.
It will be used globally.
Do you know, if I'd have known that, I'd have plugged myself a lot more. Right, tell us about mermaids, because you brought Jan, and Jan's the lady we're going to talk to now. But when did you first discover mermaids?
Probably 3 or 4 years ago, I think, I became aware of Susie, who's now the CEO. I think I must have seen her on TV. And, you know, I love social media, and I'd picked up the work that mermaids do through social media. So kind of lots of things came together. And I met some of the mermaids team and talked to them about what we're doing. And just linking back to what I was saying before, I just thought this is amazing because it's filling a huge gap was there when I was young and trying to wrestle with who I was. And I'm really pleased to say that over the last couple of years, you know, my employer Barclays and Mermaids have developed a partnership, and, you know, we work together, we do fundraising, we provide facilities, and we provide professional support for mermaids. And we're going to be taking that to another level later this year, when we're going to be talking to mermaids, young people and families, about apprenticeships, potentially with Barclays. Wow. Which will be initially in London, but we're going to be doing that in the northwest, so including the Liverpool area a little bit later as well. So, you know, we recognise the amazing work mermaids do, and you know, we're keen to do all we can to support them in the growth and the support they give to trans children and their families.
That's great, and thank you for putting us in touch, and thank you for coming back in as
You're
well.
You're very welcome.
Jan, I'm going to speak to now. I have spoke to Jan off air, and she's a very private person, and she's told me a wonderful story, which I understand why she wants to remain private. So I completely and utterly understand that. Hello, Jan.
Hello.
So, mermaids, when did you get involved?
I got involved about 4 years ago now. I began as a volunteer, and then that progressed to working for them full time.
What is mermaids about?
Okay, well, mermaids has actually been around since 1995, so transgender children are not a new thing by any means. And it was started by parents who met at the NHS Gender Identity Service for young people, and they got together, and it was literally just a kitchen table charity at first, just families supporting each other. And through, you know, word of mouth, through technology, you know, we've been able to grow into a national charity, and we are the only national charity who support transgender and gender non-conforming children and teenagers.
Explain both those statements.
Okay, so you mean transgender and gender non-conforming.
Yeah.
Okay, so a lot of people think that just because a young person or a child is expressing themselves in a way that differs from their birth gender, that that means that they are trans or that they are going to go on to become trans, and that is not always the case. So we have a really good example of a family that had several children, and they had one child who used to say, "I wish it was a boy, boy stuff's better." Was, you know, she was born female. It was football and cars, you know, and she only wore football kits. She liked to be known as a boy's name when they played through role play. But once got to puberty, it just very gradually and very slowly, she just grew out of it. She's now an adult. You know, she's very happy being female. And, you know, but she still loves football and she still loves cars. But the other child in the family, they weren't saying, "I wish I was." They were saying, "I am." So that was one fundamental reason. And then also, as they grew, the discomfort grew. It was more difficult for them. They were struggling every day to try and live as the opposite of what their brain was telling them.
That's a hell of a word you just used, the discomfort. That's a hell of a word that I've never heard used before. What a great way to describe, because nobody can imagine the pain.
Yeah.
Amy can.
Yeah.
Nobody can imagine that pain.
If you are transgender, you have gender dysphoria. You're in the wrong body, basically. So it is really, really difficult, particularly for teenagers when they start going through puberty. If it is the wrong puberty, then that is where we get real sort of mental health issues and the real discomfort. Mm. And that's why it's so important to put that support in place, regardless of what your personal beliefs are. You must get that support in place.
And the first question I was going to ask before I asked that was, and this is the question my listeners, so let's get this out of the way straight away. This is what my listeners will be saying now, or some of them, not all of them. We're hearing about it all the time now.
Yeah.
And my listeners will be saying, some of them, "But they're growing up. It's a load of garbage. You know, I was young and I wore a dress. I was young and I liked football." What do you say to those people?
I will say two things. First of all, it is true that a percentage of young people are going to express and they're going to explore, and that is absolutely fine. They should have the freedom to do that. But being trans is so much more than that. It really is so much more. And it's when it affects someone's life that they can't function and they can't live unless they are being their authentic self, then surely they should be supported and be able to do that. But I spend most of my time really myth busting.
Yeah.
You know.
Which is great that you come on the show. I think after talking to you so far for the last 10 minutes, that I think the newspapers in general do you a disservice.
Yeah.
And the children who are growing up because they're making such an issue. And that does nobody any favours.
No, not at all. Not at all. And at the end of the day, you know, it really doesn't matter what people are wearing. You know, if they're comfortable and they're happy and they're healthy, that is the most important thing for any individual.
Did you grow up, Amy, with these problems? As in, you'd rather wear this or wear that, or was it just uniform?
Yeah, I did. I mean, you know, I grew up in an all-male environment. I went to an all-male school. So, you know, I just had to conform. But the pressure of having to do that was really quite intolerable at times, and what I felt inside. So, you know, there would be occasions when, you know, particularly when I was a bit older and was left alone at home, you know, I might dress appropriately to how I felt, i.e., you know, in female clothing. And that was wonderful. But yeah, I just had to keep the whole thing bottled up. And, you know, there were times when I felt I almost exploded because of it.
Yeah. Jan, how big an issue is this whole area in this country, for instance?
I don't think it's an issue at all if young people are allowed to explore their feelings, talk through their feelings, get the help and the support from the right people, the professionals, gender identity experts who know what they are talking about, then it's not an issue at all because they can work through it and then take the path that is right for them as an individual and, you know, and for their family. That is, I think that is the most important thing, whatever that outcome is, you know.
As a gay man, I was always told, get on with it. It's your choice. Well, the same as people who trans, it's not my choice at all. I was born with this.
Absolutely.
And you still can't make people understand, even in this day and age. Are there more and more transgender people, or is it because it's more free and people can be more expressive?
Yeah, I think it's two things. I think, first of all, you know, as we get more diverse and have equality, then younger people are able to come out sooner because they have that freedom. Mm. So they're comfortable. They don't necessarily have to suppress, although a lot do. And then the other side is that they now have positive role models, you know, in the media, you know, in social media, where they can look at someone and say, oh, that's me. That's exactly like me. That's how I feel. That's who I am. And then they can make that connection and then they can voice that, you know.
Mm. My first ever experience was with April Ashley. And April Ashley actually helped me through my life as a gay man. And I used to go to April's restaurant, which was, if I remember rightly, called April and Desmond's 8 in London, and speak to April. And I was in awe of this great lady who was stunningly beautiful, but I still, as a gay man, still, because I couldn't get around my own sexuality, so I was even more confused with April. So I knew what it was like in those days. And of course, April was on the front cover of Vogue, and then somebody decided to sell the story for £5, April told me.
Wow.
£5 they sold the story to destroy her life, you know, and tried, but it didn't work.
Yeah.
What do you do for mermaids?
So mermaids as a whole, we have a website, we have an information email, we have a phone line that is available for anyone, whether it's young people, parents or carers or professionals to contact. We do residential weekends throughout the year where families can come together, where we have professional speakers. We also have family days throughout the UK. So we have family support groups. We attend prides. We also provide training into schools, colleges, NHS, you know, corporate, anywhere, you know, that needs it, fostering agencies. We provide training and just make sure that they're getting the facts, they're getting all the myths busted, and they're getting the correct information from credible reason, you know, credible sources as opposed to just Google.
Use the airways now to my listeners and break a couple of the myths, the big ones.
Okay, so the first one is separating sexuality from gender identity. If I tell someone what I do, that I work with transgender teens and children, they will usually tell me about someone they know that is gay, which is fine, share the love. However, they are two completely separate things, which is why when people say, well, how can children know? It's because they're thinking about sexuality as opposed to who you are. So the easiest way to separate it is your sexuality is who you go to bed with. Your gender identity is who you go to bed as.
Wow. Do that again, because I want to hear that statement again, because that sums up so much. Mm. And breaks every myth again.
So your sexuality is who you go to bed with, so who you are attracted to, who you fall in love with. Your gender identity is who you go to bed as. It is who you are.
Because it's such a simple statement, but it completely ticks every single box. What's the other myths?
The other myths are to do with the treatment pathway, really. We've had headlines of gay children being sterilised through surgery or Frankenstein sex change operations being performed on children. It's absolute rubbish. The treatment pathway is, it's just support, psychological support, and supporting a social transition if that is necessary for that young person until puberty. Until puberty hits, nothing is done at all. Then for a small number of people, young people, they may be prescribed a thing called a puberty blocker. And that just puts a pause button on the pituitary gland and it freezes puberty where it is. It provides a great deal of relief and it prevents negative gender markers for the future. It is completely reversible. So if you take the blocker medication away, a biological puberty will just continue. It's been used globally for years for a condition called precocious puberty, where you can get, say, a young girl of about 6 or 7 who may start periods, which is too young for them, that it's that medication they use to prevent that until they're at an appropriate age. And we know that because it's been used for so long that those people have gone on, they've gone on to have families and become healthy adults. So we know that it is a safe medication. And until you're 16, that is the only thing that is available. Once you are 16 and there is a lot of criteria in place for this, such as continuing psychological support and assessments by various gender identity specialists, plus you've got to be socially transitioned, you've got to have presented for quite a long time and been on blocking medication for at least a year, they may, and this is the Gender Identity NHS Clinic, they may prescribe low dosage cross-sex hormones. But before then, you've had to explore fertility options, so looking at preserving fertility, and you've had to have done an awful lot of work with these professionals before that happens. Anything to do with further hormone treatment or surgery is in adult services only.
It's interesting you said that, because you just reminded me, and I'm sorry, I can't remember the person's name, but many years ago I did the interview, and what came over loud and clear, and Amy's been nodding at every single thing you said, it ain't just a matter of getting new boobs and getting something done below.
Absolutely.
What is put in place to get to that transition? I'm right, aren't I, Amy?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's all about the individual and who they are. So, yeah, the psychological input is huge, and you go through, you know, I know, having gone through this as an adult, and I know a little bit of the process for a child, that the process is really quite exhaustive.
Yeah.
In terms of helping the individual understand who they are and then seeing that through the lens of a professional opinion. And I think that's really important, because, you know, as Jan said, there are so many myths out there, and there is this myth that there's somehow, the media propagate, there's a view, there's a transgender lobby that is somehow out there trying to seduce innocent children to becoming trans and taking life-changing medication at an early age. It, as Jan said, it is complete rubbish.
Yeah.
The process is so structured and governed and regulated because nobody has any interest in taking young people, or adults for that matter, down a pathway that is not right for them.
Absolutely.
This is about supporting people who are, and young people who are trans, yeah, and helping them deal with that. It's not about seducing people to be trans. There is no pernicious lobby out there that has some sort of mission to seduce people to becoming trans or thinking they're becoming trans if they're not. And, you know, okay, as an adult, you know, I was talking to a friend who was kind of questioning where they were and transition. And I said, look, quite bluntly, if you're trans, you know it. You,
yes,
absolutely do. And if you're questioning, the process will not let you go any further.
Has the, and let's ask this negative question, the unthinkable, has anybody transed and then gone, what have I done? Do you know of anyone?
I think there has been one or two cases that has happened, but these are people who have self-medicated.
So they haven't got professional help.
Absolutely.
To finish off, what do you want people to take from this interview now?
I want people to remember that this year, Stonewall produced a report and the figures were quite chilling. It was published in The Guardian in June and it showed that 49% of young trans youth who are unsupported have attempted suicide. And 84% self-harm. Now, regardless of your beliefs and regardless of what the outcomes for those young people are going to be, you have to agree that those figures must change. You know, our young people need to be accepted, loved and supported, regardless of whether it is just a phase or whether it's something they're exploring or whether it is because they are trans. And if they are, they know.
Amy, to finish off from you, what's your message to people out there?
Well, it's really quite simple, Pete. You know, mermaids save lives. And, you know, the statistics Jan's just given us are horrifying and speak for themselves. But the support that mermaids are able to give young trans people and their families quite literally saves lives because the risk of self-harm and suicide attempt is so high. And, you know, I'm so proud to be an advocate of mermaids and to introduce mermaids to a wider audience. And I hope this session, this interview, has increased listeners' understanding of where trans kids are and the fantastic work that mermaids are doing with them.
Smashing. Jan, thank you so much for coming in. How
thank
do people
you.
Find out about you?
So they can look at our website, which is www.mermaidsuk.org.uk. Our helpline is 0344 334 0550.
Let me give that number again very slowly.
Okay. 0344 334 0550.
Do you do Twitter or Facebook?
We do have a Facebook page and we are on Twitter.
And what are those, do you know?
Mermaids UK, I think, is our Facebook page.
Yeah.
And Twitter is @mermaids_gender.